8-27. 8-27. 8 points in 27 seconds. That was the most unbelievable sequence of events that I can't even speak right now. I just stuttered and we're not even 15 seconds in. That was so unbelievable. By the way, I'm recording this 28 hours after this happened. It is the next night around midnight. And this is the way I've been talking all day. I've been loud. I've been jittery. I'm still kind of shaking. I've been thinking about this game all day, even during my class. I had class today. Wasn't thinking about school. Wasn't thinking about work. Wasn't thinking about anything except the Knicks. 8 points in 27 seconds. How absolutely unbelievable was that, Knicks fans? Oh my God. I don't know where to begin. Like, that was a miracle. That was a miracle that took place on 7th Avenue last night, on 33rd. That was a freaking miracle. That kind of stuff, and if you have been a Knicks fan for any, you know, like close to a decade, not even, just for a few years, you know that that never happens to the Knicks. That stuff never happens to the Knicks, but it always happens against the Knicks. Do I dare mention Reggie Miller? Luka Doncic? Like, that stuff has always taunted us. So now we have that moment. We get to have a moment that's going to be talked about 30 years down the line. Every special championship team, just saying, has a moment that they bring up. Has a moment that stands out in that highlight film at the end of the year. Game 2, round 1 of the Eastern Conference playoffs, just had a sequence that you could very well be talking about. Do the Knicks end up having a special run here in 2024? And there's only one thing that special is. I'm hype right now. I don't know if I'm ever going to come down. I guess I got to wait until this next game happens to get back into the zone. But I'm taking every fucking second from now until the Knicks play on Thursday to just embrace this. Because we're not getting this as Knicks fans much. We haven't gotten this. This was unbelievable. It was the best Knicks moment of my life. I've never seen a Knicks sequence of events like this ever happen. It comes very close. Maybe it jumps it. I don't know. I still have to get my thoughts in order of the, like, talking about best sports moments of my life. There are a couple ones. I mean, obviously, 09, it's hard for me to remember when the Yankees won a championship. Obviously, that would be one. But, like, in recent memory, like, the DJ home run against the Astros, but we ended up losing that game. Like, there are moments that just happen, and this is up there, you know, in my life as a Knicks fan. This has to be number one, at least as a fucking Knicks fan. Obviously, again, like, I don't want to get into this whole, like, there are so many great things I've witnessed as a Yankees fan, but as a Knicks fan, this goes back to 1999, where I was 4 years old when Larry Johnson hit the 4-point play. I was 4 years old when Allen Houston did what he did in the first round. Like, it's the best Knicks moment since that. Un-fucking-believable. This is the basketball gods repaying the Knicks for not losing the final game of the season to get the right matchup. That's what that was. This is maybe the basketball gods repaying the Knicks for dealing with all the garbage, all the injuries, and still not quitting and saying, all right, let's just hang it up and rest these guys. They're getting repaid now. Guys, I had my hand. I had the TV remote in my hand. It was already on mute. I don't know why. It was a home game. But I was just, I didn't want to hear announcing. I was pissed off. And I had my thumb over the power button with 27 seconds left. I did. I was ready to call quits just like that. And then that all happens. This is a Tom Thibodeau team. How many times have I gone on here and said that? It's a Tom Thibodeau team. You get that garbage list that came out that Tibbs, you know, wasn't a coach of the year candidate, and it's because players don't want to play for him, right? That anybody who saw that, like, who gives a fuck? Because these players in this locker room, they fucking love this guy. How do I know? Look at the way they fight for him. I mean, this team embodies that type. They embody hustle. That's in their DNA. That's in their blood. It's in their veins. They have this refuse to quit mentality. It's their identity. Every friggin' night. The way they fought at the end of that game is no different than the way they fight in game one of the preseason. I kid you not. They're fighting that way every friggin' game. Now the rest of the world gets to see it. So they don't just know the Knicks by narratives and clickbait articles and ESPN, you know, TV clips that float around the internet. You know, no. Now the rest of the world gets to see this on national TV. Oh, shit. Knicks fans were right. This team is pretty fucking good. And my gosh, I need to get to Madison Square Garden. That place, I mean, MSG is the place to be, right? I don't know what to say. I can sit here and I guess we'll analyze this. You know, I guess we'll touch on some X's and O's and some details and storylines of this game. We'll talk about Brunson's struggles. And I don't know what to say. The Philadelphia 76ers players certainly don't know what to say. I mean, you got stupid comments every night. You got this asshole Kelly Oubre saying that MSG's a bunch of celebrities who don't pay attention to the games. Did you see what happened after Dante hit that three? Which is just one of the most iconic photos there is. It's gonna be. He goes over to the sideline. You got Chris Rock, Gary V, motherfucking Ben Stiller, and Spike Lee all going nuts. You got John Starks. I thought John Starks was going to run to half court in the middle of the third quarter after what Josh Hart was doing. You're telling me these guys don't care about the game? Ben Stiller is a huge Knicks fan. Chris Rock, Tracy Morgan, these guys are going nuts. And this idiot Paul Reed, by the way, who nobody even knows who you are. More people know you now because of what you said. You wanted this matchup because it's easier, because it's the preferred matchup for you guys. It's fucking 2-0. Bum. A bum's bum. And now we get to play in front of bums. Oh, I can't wait till the Knicks go to white trash Philadelphia and do this in front of their fans. Maybe they'll be gentlemen. Give them a game. But I am hoping for nothing but the absolute biggest sweep in mankind. I want nothing but for the absolute worst to this scumbag city to happen. I just want the ultimate sweep. Now, maybe, you know, I should shut the fuck up and stop trying to talk shit because, boy, because that could bite me in the ass. But, like, no, it's all fun and games. It's all sports, and I'm just happy that the Knicks, we finally have a team that actually has a chance to do damage. We're not talking ourselves into some bullshit. This isn't like, man, if you were, listen, man, I'm not, what I'm about to say, and I said this earlier on social media today, this is not me bashing the casual fans or the bandwagon newer Knicks fans, but it's rather going to be me praising and connecting with the diehards who are there through the thick and thin. And unless, like, if you weren't around for those Ron Baker days, those Lou Amundsen days, those days where Samuel Dalembert was starting at center, Jose Calderon and Shane Larkin were point guards, Lance Thomas was in the starting lineup, David Fizdale, Jeff Hornacek, Kurt Rambis, Phil Jackson forcing triangle offense, Fizdale forcing an intricate system on a bunch of misfits. Like, if you weren't there for all of those days, and if you watched all those games, if you were watching all of those games, 48-82, then only you know the true feeling of what last night was. You can, if you were there for those Knicks teams who just absolutely sucked more than suck, then you can feel that euphoria better than the casual fan can. Only the diehard fans who've been through the lowest of the lows know exactly how great that feeling was last night. It's like the diehards have an ESP. It just hits different. It just hits different. And I feel bad for those who are just hopping on now and saw last night. And they're probably excited, but you can't know the true feeling unless you witnessed all the garbage that was the years prior. And I'm 29 years old talking. There was a lot of shit before me too that was bad. But, like, I had a choice to watch the Knicks when they sucked. You know? But I didn't have a choice to. I wasn't born when they sucked before me. But, like, that was unbelievable. Unbelievable. And now we get to go in Philly, to go to Philly with the chance to at least come home up in the series. And you listen, at this point, I don't know that I believe in momentum in the playoffs, but I do think toughness is a thing. And if you're just not there physically, mentally, and I think the Sixers are mentally weak. I think they're incredibly fucking soft. Year to year, you see it. But, like, to lose like that, like, their best player is known as a notorious choker. It's, there is nothing, I cannot imagine that there's, I mean, you look at Joel Embiid's interview after the game, he couldn't even look up from his hands, he was staring right into his lap. There's nothing worse than to think you're about to win, and then you just don't. I mean, look, if you haven't seen on Twitter yet, it's been posted all over. The Philadelphia 76ers broadcast team was all happy. They were all hyped. They were excited. They were getting to their post-game ad reads and everything. Check into the post-game. It's going to be a fun one. Oh, yeah. All we had to do was split on the road, and now we got to go back down to the turnpike, and we're headed home. 8 seconds later, whatever the fuck it was, they're all awkward pauses, and they're all like, well, oh, it was fucking music to listen to. And I watched that clip like a million times, maybe more. Anyways, what an unfucking believable night that was last night. And I'm never going to forget it. I ordered a shirt about game two already. It's coming in the mail by the end of the month. Is it a jinx? I don't care because I'm confident, I'm cocky, and I'm arrogant right now. And the Knicks are unbelievable. And they're the best thing that's happened to New York City this year. So let's talk. Let's get to our intro, by the way. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the podcast, BD4. Let's go. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, RJ Carbone. You are listening to BD4, where there's no better way to get your Yankees and Knicks analysis. We also do MMA. Yanks every series, Knicks every game, MMA on occasion. Let's get to it. Anthony for three. Freaking believable. Don't know why I said freaking, because I've said fucking like 8 times already in this show. Welcome to the podcast, everybody. Episode 670 of BD4. The Knicks complete a miraculous game 2 comeback at Madison Square Garden in Manhattan last night. 104-101. I don't even know if we're going to do the usual 1-4 quarters 1-4 recap. Let's just start at the end. You get to 47 seconds left in the game. The Knicks are down 5 points. Kyle Lowry's at the free throw line. He misses the free throw, the second one. The Knicks go down on the other end. Brunson's got the ball. Lowry picks Brunson's pocket. Falls on the ground with the ball, with Brunson. Dante comes from out of nowhere. He comes up with it. Dante drives middle, kicks to Brunson on the corner. Brunson, one dribble side, a little side dribble. He shoots it. The ball bounces front rim one time. And he gets the shooter's roll. He gets the bounce. And that puts the Knicks up 2 points. Sorry. That puts the Knicks down by only 2 points. They go from down 5-2. Kyle Lowry throws the inbound. But you get Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson. Whoever it was. They steal the inbound together. They're wrestling with Tyrese Maxey. They made contact with him a few times. We'll talk about that. Josh Hart comes up with the ball while Maxey's on the ground. He passes to Dante DiVincenzo. DiVincenzo shoots and misses a 3-pointer. From out of nowhere, Isaiah Hartenstein comes, grabs the offensive rebound, wrestles through traffic, somehow gets it to OG Anunoby, who passes to Dante at the top of the key. And Dante, once again, he tries again, shoots a 3 from the top of the key, double bang. Mike Breen goes double bang. The Knicks are up. And then on the other end, you still got some time. Philly draws up an ATO set, Nick Nurse does, and he's got Tyrese Maxey receiving the ball in the backcourt. This way he can get downhill with a full head of steam. And he's sprinting on the ball. He's sprinting. OG gets screened out of the action, so he's eliminated from the play. Isaiah Hartenstein's backtracking in pick and roll. And you got Deuce providing ball side help. But Deuce wasn't really in the action. Maxey gets past Isaiah Hartenstein. but Ihart recovers just enough. He gets just enough recovery there to where he gets his hand on the ball and he hits it against the backboard and he gets the fucking block. OG Anunoby grabs the rebound. He's fouled before he gets pushed out of bounds and he gets to the free throw line, knocks down 2 out of 2. And that was all she wrote. The Knicks win 104 to 101. Jalen Brunson, 24. Hart, 21 points. I mean, Josh Hart, for all the garbage that I give him sometimes. And you know what, man? It's out of love. It's just out of wanting my team to do amazing and having high standards. The dude, 21 points for him. Like, he's been their best player. That first half that he had was the reason the Knicks weren't blown out by the second half. He kept the Knicks in it. There were times it looked like this was headed for a 20-point-plus loss. Josh Hart was the reason the Knicks were still in the game coming out in the third quarter. He knocks down 4 triples in the game. I think they all came in the first half. You got Philly, who's still helping off of him an incredibly amount. I mean, they're fucking ignoring the guy. But now he's shooting it with confidence. He's not thinking about it. He's shooting it right the hell away. And right now it's paying off. You know, who's to say that's not sustainable? It's not. Let's just say it. I'll say it. It's not sustainable. But right now it's working. So we're going to keep doing it. Knocks down the left elbow 3 in the second quarter. Later in the second quarter, he's got that pull-up 3 in transition to get the 2-for-1. Like, I always joke about, you know, Josh Hart would be, you know, a top player in the game if he could just shoot a 3-pointer. This is what it looks like. These, like, 21, 15, and 5, whatever the fuck he had last night, that's what you're getting now that he's knocking down 3s. You're getting exactly what I was saying. One of the best players in the game at the moment. Like, he's playing like that. He's doing everything now. And he's adding in efficient shooting. He's playing exactly the way he played when he first came here and when he couldn't miss 3s. So he was like LeBron. That's what he's doing right now. He's LeBron. He's literally their LeBron. He's pushing the ball in transition. Just very quick on the fast break, fearless at the basket with Joel Embiid down there. It doesn't matter. He'll finish over him. The intangibles are still there. Like, he's stealing the ball for Maxi. When Maxi was on the ground, he just jumps on him, doesn't give up on the play. And he does this, by the way, he played 48 minutes last night. There's 48 minutes in a game. He played every single second, every single minute, every single bit of it. The guy is just pure energy. I don't know where he gets it from. Sometimes I wish I had that energy. Unbelievable. Dante DiVincenzo, 19 points. A massive, obviously a massive bucket. But yeah, I mean, that's what we do. Italian-Americans always get the job done. That's what we fucking do. Give us credit, please. You know, Maniscalco says Italian-Americans don't play ball. Watch the Knicks, bro. Credit to Tom Thibodeau for making that late sub. I had no issue with it. I know Deuce was on one, but he had some moments, and you know, he takes Deuce out. 3 or so minutes to go, puts Dante in, and it ends up paying off. Isaiah Hartenstein, 14 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists. 7 of 8 from the floor, 7 of 7 in the second half. Just spamming floaters. Spamming floaters. Those pocket passes from Brunson. Where Brunson's finding pockets to drive into and he's hitting Ihart with those bounce passes. Ihart's, you know, doing a really good job, as he always does, just relocating into open space to set up the floater in the short mid-range. And it was those two have such a great two-man game. And it was working. And they were working, you know, half-court actions, like those empty side actions between Brunson and Hartenstein. He was unbelievable. The defense from him was unfriggin' believable, especially in that third quarter. Christ. But the defense from the Knicks was amazing. It was amazing, and I want to talk about it. Let's head to break, and we'll talk some defense. when we get back. Stay with us. Episode 670 of BD4.
Hey there. Thanks for listening in so far. If you enjoy this episode, please give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're on YouTube, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. Thanks so much. You can follow us on social media as well. On Instagram, we're at BD4Pod and at Rob J. Carbone. On X, we're at BD4Pod and at RJCBD4. And on Facebook, we're BD4.
Okay. That was some defense, you know? Wow. It's weird because, like, when you're watching the game, it feels like the Knicks can never get stops. But you look up and they only gave up 101 points. Like, they had some trouble, right? Tyrese Maxey is a problem right now. He's a in the non-Deuce McBride minutes, Tyrese Maxey is an issue. You know, when OG is out there having to guard at the point of attack, chasing the quickest point guard in the Eastern Conference around, just because De'Aaron Fox exists, I don't like that. It lowers his value because Dante's best value, OG, did I say Dante there? OG is at the point of attack defending the quickest point guard in the East. But that's not his best. That's not where his best value comes from. His best value is when OG is in help, when he's playing in that role where he's allowed to roam off of a non-shooter on the back line. Right? And he's that guy, that safety valve. There's no safety valve when OG Anunoby has to guard at the point of attack. Because Maxey is quick and OG has problems with that. So once Maxey gets past the point of attack and he gets into the paint, now without a safety valve there, the Knicks have to help off strong side. So they help off the strong side. Maxey's going to make that read, kick it to the corners, to the wings, bucket. They stay home on the strong side. Maxey's got a wide open pathway to the basket. And that's what you've seen in each of the first two games when Deuce McBride is not on the floor, because Deuce has really defended him well. So I think it's going to be important for Tom Thibodeau in game three. We said this in game one, so I don't know if it's going to happen, but it's going to be important to match Deuce McBride's minutes with Tyrese Maxey's. And they've had some trouble with Embiid. Obviously, I mean, he's Embiid. He's not even close to 100% right now, and he's putting up numbers better than anybody else outside Jokic. Like, they're doing everything they can on him. They're hounding the guy. They're contesting every shot. They're playing very physical. They're making him labor. Like, they're making him work for every shot. You know, he scored 20-something points. It took 29 shots. They're being very physical with him. They're mixing up coverages one-on-one, help, late help, help to the empty side. They'll send a guy. Like, they're doing everything they can. The only critique I would add on Joel Embiid when it comes to the coverage on him, sometimes they're not getting out high enough. I feel like Mitchell Robinson and Ihart have got to do a little bit more. Mitch, do a little bit of a better job forcing Embiid to put the ball on the floor, because right now he's compromised. He's a lot slower. So force him to attack. You know, Mitch has given him a little too much room. A couple times where he allowed Philly to DHO into a three-point attempt. You know, Ihart, there was a play where he had some miscommunication where I think he thought he was asking for the switch. But Josh Hart stayed home on Lowry, so they both left Embiid open. Ihart had to close out. I think he got the stop. But, like, you know, a couple times he went under the screen. So they just have to worry about the pick and pop there, or, you know, DHO into a three. Worry about Embiid on the perimeter because he's still a threat. It's a shot you live with, but, you know, they were burnt a couple times. But overall, this defense has, again, they've been good 104 points the first game, 101 points last night. They've been very good. You know, as worried as I am about Maxey and as good as he's been, it's been limited outside of him and Joel. It's when those two share the floor that's when the Knicks have problems. But, I mean, the Knicks are playing their asses off. They're playing super physical. My whole thing for the Knicks this year, I've said it a few times on the show, I want them to play so physical where you hear complaints around the league, where you hear complaints. And the Knicks played so physical last night to a point where the opposing team filed a grievance. That's the kind of physical that I want. Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Play physical to a point where you try to file a grievance. That's how physical they play. They got Joel Embiid complaining about officiating. Joel Embiid, Mr. Foul Hunter himself. They've got Nick Nurse complaining about it, and Joel Embiid's telling Nick Nurse to stop complaining. Like, they're a mess over there. McBride grabbing the ball for Maxey, taking it out of his hands. Maxey falls flat on his fucking ass. That felt amazing. They're getting physical with Kyle Lowry, banging him up. Yes. Yes. The best part of that game last night was that the Knicks were super physical. Was that Philadelphia, in those final moments, they were fouled. They were fouled. The fans complained all night. Their players complained. The refs admitted it this morning. Like, and nothing happened. You know why? Because it doesn't matter. Because the Knicks won the game. You can talk all you want. Your opinion means nothing. My opinion means nothing. The only thing that matters is whose name is that W next to at the end of the day. The Knicks. Twice. Can't spell Philly without back-to-back L's. Saw that on Twitter. Stole it. It's the Knicks wanted that one more. They wanted it more. There were times where Philadelphia, I thought, you know, in this game, like, oh, shit. Are they playing a little harder? You know, they had some 50-50 balls in the first half. That jump ball where Hartenstein lost to Tobias bothered me. You had Josh Hart lose a rebound in the third quarter early on to Kyle Lowry, just not securing it. You know, Lowry's grabbing offensive rebounds and loose balls with 3 minutes left in the game. Like, there were some moments where I was like, shit, man, come on. But at the end of the day, the sequence that's got to be remembered, again, years and years and years from now, tells you all you need to know about this Knicks team. Their defense was remarkable. Their hustle was remarkable. I thought their defense was good. Their defense overall was, they did the correct scheming, the correct strategy, you know, the stunting, the digs, Hart, Dante, like, hedges on pick and roll. You know, you got Hartenstein hedging. Bojan's even fucking hedging pick and rolls. I thought they made the right switches. They're switching more than they usually do. It seemed like the Knicks were fine with the Brunson switch onto Maxey, and you had OG hedging. Like, they were living with that matchup, which was interesting. But again, I prefer OG in a different role. So I was fine with that. I thought the help defense was good. They were helping off the right guys off of non-shooters like Tobias, like Oubre, so they could help onto Maxey and Embiid. You know, they forced a tough shot a few times. They forced a lot of tough shots, helping off non-shooters and onto those two. You know, and if it opened up, you know, if you double a guy and it opens up that look, you don't have to worry as much about the rotation because you're opening up a poor shooter in Tobias Harris, who's bricking corner threes left and right. Oubre, who's afraid to shoot corner threes. Like, thought the help defense was good. You know, helping the helper. First quarter, you saw a possession where Deuce McBride helps onto Embiid. Bojan tags Deuce's man. That's called helping the helper. You know, if Embiid, there was a possession where he has the ball, his back's to the weak side, so the Knicks bring help off the weak side corner to the ball side. Just smart help defense. Knowing when to help, I think, is the best way I can put that. Dante DiVincenzo, probably his best defensive game of the season. You know, he's out there in that third quarter. He's blowing up every DHO known to man. Blowing up DHO time and time again. He's navigating screens. He's staying attached and disrupting with his wingspan. Pressure and ball handlers, smothering perimeter players and denying entry passes. He did a really good job in help, you know, jumping the pass lanes, creating defense, creating offense out of defense. He's in rotation, digging, recovering, etc. Isaiah Hartenstein, you know, you have Mitch doing his damn thing in game one. Isaiah Hartenstein doing his damn thing in game two. That's the great thing about having two starting centers on the team. I thought Ihart was great in one-on-one against Embiid. His closeouts were effective. Provided some great perimeter ball pressure. The block on Oubre in transition. Yeah, the block late in the game, obviously on Maxey. OG Anunoby, for as much troubles as he did have on Maxey, I thought the third quarter, he did a really fabulous job on him. I thought he looked good in that third quarter, which was a pivotal quarter in the game. And even Bojan Bogdanović played better defense than he usually does. So, that's what I got. I do want to bring up one more thing before we wrap this up. And we'll bring it up as soon as we return from break. It's, you know, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about Jalen Brunson. We won't make this an elephant in the room. We'll talk about it because it's become a thing now, right? Two games. We got to start having a conversation. So let's talk.
If you're interested in our website, just go to www.bd4blog.com. You can subscribe to our blog on there right on the front page. Just like on the podcast, we cover Yankees, Knicks, and MMA. Also on our website are the links to the different platforms for the podcast. Thanks so much.
Okay, listen, it's not been easy for Jalen Brunson. It's a really tough, right now the Knicks half-court offense is a mess. They're getting nowhere on these possessions. There's a lot of late clock possessions, and it's a rough time. And Jalen Brunson, this isn't the first time he struggled against the Sixers. In the regular season, there were two games where he shot below 30% on the Sixers. He was 8 for 29 last night, 24 points. So this now, in six games, he shot below 30% four times. Which means Philly, they're very well equipped. They're very well set up with switchable wingspan that they can throw on Jalen in isolation off the pick and roll. They can cut off his drives because of that. They make it very difficult for Jalen to get to his spots. His favorite spot on the floor is that short mid-range on the left side. He loves going to those floaters just outside the semicircle. Right? He gets past the point of attack, gets downhill, but now he's getting downhill and he's a little further out than he usually is, because they've got the length to cut off his drive. They're taking away the middle. Brunson lives in the middle, but they're taking that away. They're icing pick and roll, pushing Brunson to his offhand side and into help, closer to Embiid. And he's become a lot more hesitant because of that. He's unable to attack closeouts. They're taking away his catch-and-shoot three-point looks. I can't remember the last time he's taken a catch-and-shoot three-pointer. You know, and part of that is because you don't have Julius's gravitational pull, right? We talked about Julius's gravity a lot towards the end of the regular season. And how do you fix that? Somebody else has to create that gravity. They got to generate gravity. So maybe run Dante DiVincenzo in more sets. Dante's got shooting gravity. He can drag Embiid out of drop coverage and force him to come to the level. Maybe you get Brunson. We talked about this in episode one or in the episode after game one. Maybe you get Brunson involved in more off-ball looks. Right? Use Isaiah Hartenstein as a hub. Have Brunson coming off staggers, screens, DHO, weak side actions. But again, Philly, they've been trying to do that. Philly's doing a really good job in ball denial. They're denying him the ball. So maybe you set up your offense a little differently. Your alignment is Dante one pass away from the action a lot. You know? Because Josh Hart has created spacing issues. Like, he's making them, but they're still helping off of him, and sometimes they're helping onto Brunson. And he's out there for 48 minutes, so maybe you play Josh Hart 38 minutes and not 48, right? And during those 10 minutes, you have OG and Boyan get power forward minutes to create better spacing in the half court. One of the things I think the Knicks should try, because, like, I'm noticing even, like, the baskets that Jalen has made and the baskets that he did make last night, empty side actions, removing strong side help from rotating over onto Jalen. The first basket of the game for Jalen was an empty side pick and roll with he and Mitch, Embiid's in a high drop. The first basket he makes in the second quarter, empty side pick and roll with Brunson and Nyhart, Embiid's in a high drop. Third quarter, he makes his shot out of an empty side pick and roll with he and Nyhart. Paul Reed is in a drop. Go to the empty side and attack the drop coverage because you're removing the help. There's nobody over there to help. Maybe try running him in more three-man actions. You saw some of that last night. The Knicks ran a blind pig action with Josh Hart as the cutter on the week second side. So that takes away from, that takes attention. You have a blunt, when you run blind pick, the whole point of it is to take away attention from a relocating player. So Brunson relocates on the corner. You got Nyhart and Hart running an action together, and then you kick it real quick as Nyhart screens for Brunson. Blind pick. Pistol sets, right? Miami-Orlando actions. Handoffs, ball screens. Get him going in off-ball actions, in three-man actions. Empty side actions. Got to try everything at this point because it's not looking good. And he's got to do a better job making decisions. Better decision making. He's rushing a lot of shots. A lot of rear view contests. You know, he's forcing a lot of shots in one-on-one, especially in that fourth quarter. I mean, I don't remember if there was ever a time where I kind of wanted Brunson off the floor. Not blaming Tibbs. He's your best fucking player, one of the best in basketball, but it gets ugly. It was getting ugly. Like, his on-off, I don't know what his on-off numbers are, but they can't be good because, like, early in the second half, in those non-Brunson minutes, the offense was flowing because they were running through Nyhart, not non-Brunson minutes, but there were minutes where Brunson wasn't on the ball early in the second half. They were running it through Nyhart. So they were using him, like I said, as a hub, and they were getting Brunson looks and other guys' looks with Brunson off the ball, and it was working great. But early in the fourth quarter were the non-Brunson minutes, and you had Deuce McBride and Bojan Bogdanović just thriving. And then Brunson comes back in, and the Knicks kind of get stagnant again. Right? But early in the fourth, Bogey, man, doing plenty right now. This is all we need from him. I still think we're going to get the Bogey game. We haven't gotten the Bogey game yet, and I feel like we're going to get it. But like this, he's doing his job. This postseason, the numbers may not say he's been great. He's been great. Because all you need in the postseason are moments that help win a game. And what he did in the fourth quarter, the Knicks are struggling to bust Nick Nurse's little zone defense. Struggling to bust the zone. Bogey comes in. How do you bust it? You shoot. Knocks down two threes early in the fourth quarter. Credit to Tibbs for making that sub. McBride. I mean, this guy, the rapid growth, the development of Deuce McBride. This guy never had handles. You never saw the shot really come to fruition yet. This year comes, gets off to another slow start, third-year player, but he finally cracks the rotation consistently after the trade, and my gosh, you're seeing improvements on the ball. The handles, he's snaking pick and roll, gets to the right elbow, knocks down a jumper. Taking Tobias Harris off the dribble, finishing left-hand floater off the glass. The catch-and-shoot three-point shooting, the mid-range pull-ups with the high release point. I mean, the things he's doing, it's so important for when Brunson's off the floor. So Jalen Brunson's been terrible, pathetic in these two games, and I've not enjoyed watching him play basketball. He's been so fucking bad. It's like not hurting them as much because the role players, are stepping up. And by the way, like, I'm not going to kill Brunson. It's funny because Brunson's greatness is so, he's so great that, like, we're calling this an awful game from him. I just called it pathetic. The object of the game is to score more points than the other team. Brunson led the winning team in points last night. That's the point of the game, is it not? Fuck. Let's hand out real briefly our Bing Bong game balls.
Bing Bong.
Of course. Listen, I could have went to Josh Hart because technically he had the best line. In the playoffs, I do things differently. If you knock down a game winner, you automatically get in the game ball. Dante DiVincenzo, the big ragu. One of my favorite players on this team because he's an Italian-American. You're getting the game ball, Dante. 19 points, 4 boards, 3 assists, couple steals, a turnover, 50% from the floor, 50% from 3, 4 of 8, 100% at the free throw line. He was a plus 11, 4 fouls, played 37 minutes last night. He's getting the game ball. His first of the postseason, he had 14 in the regular season, so he's got 15 on the year. Dante DiVincenzo, great to see him come to life last night after an underwhelming game one. So Dante is getting the game ball from the starting unit. Let's go to the bench. On the bench, I'm going to give it to Bojan Bogdanović. Same thing. Kind of the same thing. I don't care if he didn't exactly have the game of his life, you know? What'd he do in this game? 6 points on 2 of 7. 6 points on 2 of 7. Didn't do much, but it was the weight of what he did. The fourth quarter shot making. All you need to do is knock down a couple big shots, and I'm giving it to you. It's the postseason. 6 points for Bojan. 2 for 6 from 3. No turnovers. 12 minutes played. He was a plus 2. This is his first game ball of the postseason. He had 10 in the regular season with the Knicks, which for a guy who got a lot of hate, 10 in the second half of the year, pretty good. So 11 in total. Bojan Bogdanović, good for you. Yeah, man, it's like enough said. I'll shut my mouth. The series is not over. Like I said, they're like momentum. I don't know that momentum exists in a postseason. So we got to be careful. You know, right now, like a lot of what we're doing, especially last night, was feeding off of Madison Square Garden. They're feeding off the crowd. So now you got 2 games in Philly. And yes, Knicks fans travel well. And I'm sure they'll travel well to Philly. But like, at the end of the day, you need your best player to show up. Because usually, stars win. right now. They're winning games against, you know, the basketball rules. Like, usually your two star players play well in modern NBA, you're going to win the game. And that's a theory that is 0-2 at the moment. But that's like, we need Brunson. We can't rely on this, you know, because role players at the end of the day, they always say they play better on the road. I'm sorry, they play better at home than on the road. The Knicks are going to need Jalen Brunson to be Jalen Brunson, and that has to happen on Thursday night. I would like to at least, obviously, split on the road. If they can split, come away with a split. Preferably, you know, winning tomorrow or Thursday. I feel like that's the best one. Like, losing, that would, let's win. Let's fucking sweep. Who's to say we have to lose? Let's sweep. Let's fucking sweep these losers. Let's get to our final break. We'll wrap it up with our trivia when we return.
Studio 69 Productions is a podcast production agency created by Leo Rodriguez to allow content creators to market their podcast. It's an online platform that will market your podcast or any other project that you're working on. Get in touch with Leo Rodriguez from Studio 69 Productions. You can find Studio 69 Productions on Instagram at Studio69NJ. Studio 69 Productions, where dreams are heard and born.
Thanks for listening to BD4, where there is no better way to get your Yankees and Knicks analysis. We also do MMA, Yanks every series, Knicks every game, and MMA on occasion.
Welcome back to the podcast, episode 670 of BD4. Thanks for tuning in to BD4, where there's no better way to get your Yankees and Knicks analysis. Yanks every series, Knicks every game, MMA on occasion. Did miss a Yankees episode in the last series against the Rays. Just had a busy weekend. But we will be back on schedule, don't worry, after the Oakland series, which the Yankees are tied 1-1 at the moment. It's a 4-game set. And again, as for MMA, I'm trying my best to get a UFC 300 episode out soon. So hopefully we can get to that. Hopefully. That was an amazing card. But as for this next episode, let's wrap it up with our trivia. Okay. Here's a question. This is our trivia for tonight. What are the two iconic 1999 Knicks playoff moments that last night's sequence is being compared to? Now, if you paid attention to the intro portion of this show, I think I gave you the answer. I guess you can go back and rewind now if you really want to. Then again, all these trivias you could probably just look up. But in this episode, our trivia question of the day: what are the two iconic 1999 Knicks playoff moments that last night's sequence is being compared to? So let me know the answer wherever you can reach me. If you get the answer, I'll give you a shout-out in the next show in front of all two of our listeners. Thanks, everybody. I do appreciate it, though. And I'll talk to you after Game 3, Knicks fans. Let's go. Let's sweep these fuckers.
This episode was brought to you by Anchor.
Hey there! If you stayed the entire way through, we thank you immensely for it. We hope you enjoyed this podcast and that you come back for the next episode real soon. Don't forget to like, subscribe, comment, download these episodes, and share them with your friends as well. BD4 is a 5-star podcast simply because of you. And we'd like to keep it that way. Have a wonderful day. Go Yankees and go Knicks!